Rangan Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarane Trinadipi Sunichena Tarariva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari Harinama 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 Vikivalam Kalo Nastyeva 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 Gatiranyata Panchakalpatarubhischa Kripasindubhyayevacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Welcome everybody to session number 7 of this Bhagavad Gita seminar being conducted at the home of Pushpa and Shekhar Agrawal here in beautiful Yorba Linda, California. We are studying tonight chapters 10 and 11. I have a message. Wait one second. A message from my producer. Very good. Yes, Krishna Kumar. The volume was low in the recorder. All right. Check. 1, 2, 3. Should be fine now. Should be better. All right. Everyone chant the Maha Mantra and bless the 15 devotees online. Krishna, Krishna. Hare, Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rama, Rama, Hare, Hare. Okay, let us proceed. Chapter 10 has 42 verses and is entitled The Opulence of the Absolute. And the first 7 verses deals with knowledge that is better than before. So I've selected 2 verses out of this section. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Neither the host of demigods nor the great sages know my origin or opulences, for in every respect I am the source of the demigods and sages." The way to understand this, you don't know your great-great-grandfather. He existed and left before you were even born. You only know about him from your father or your grandfather. You have no direct experience. So the demigods and sages, they are part of the material creation. But Krishna is existing even when there is no material creation. Before there's a material creation, Krishna is existing. So it's impossible for the demigods or sages to know anything about Krishna unless it is revealed to them. But on their own, independently, direct experience, no. Only as much as Krishna allows them to understand. And verse number 7. One who is factually convinced of this opulence and mystic power of mine engages in unalloyed devotional service. Of this there is no doubt. So we heard a lot last night, did we not, this phrase, unalloyed devotional service. It's coming up more and more. So when things are repeated, that seems to indicate it's important. So this whole concept of unalloyed devotional service is actually the whole conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. That much we should take away from this seminar. That we should at least know the main points and the main principles of Bhagavad Gita. All right? Now we come to the four nutshell or seed verses of Bhagavad Gita. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is the famous Chatu Shloki, four nutshell or seed verses that Lord Narayan spoke to Lord Brahma at the dawn of creation. That is narrated in the second canto, chapter 9, that whole section. So Prabhupada says that there are four nutshell verses of Bhagavad Gita as well. And these are the four nutshell or seed verses of Bhagavad Gita. So let's go now. Number 8. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So, first line, I am the source of all spiritual material worlds. What does that mean? That there's nothing superior to Krishna. He is the origin. And not only that, he himself has no origin. That's significant. That is the meaning of the absolute truth. It has no origin other than itself. You and I have origins, our fathers, their fathers, and going back, ultimately, you'll get to Lord Brahma. But he has an origin, Garbhodakashayi Vishnu. Who has an origin? Mahavishnu. Who has an origin? Narayan. Who has an origin? Mahasankarshan. Who has an origin? Baladev. Who has an origin? Krishna. No origin. So when Krishna says, I am the source of all spiritual material worlds, this also indicates that he's the absolute truth. The absolute truth is defined, that from which everything comes, that from which everything is sustained, and that which everything will enter at the end. That's the absolute truth. So I am the source. Everything emanates from me. Now, the second part, and actually the rest of the whole Chatu Shloki is about devotees. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service. In other words, if somebody actually understands this principle, then the only conclusion is, I must surrender, I must render service. That can be the only conclusion. Right? And worship me with all their hearts. Jesus said the same thing. Love God with your whole soul, your whole heart, your whole mind. Therefore, Jesus is a very good guru. Now we just have to tell them who that God is that they have to worship with all their heart. And then we can say that God that Jesus is referring to is known as Krishna. Very good. So, when Krishna says, worship me with all their hearts, that's complete surrender. If you recall, in chapter 4, Krishna says, as you surrender to me, I reward you accordingly. But if you want Krishna, then you have to go all the way in. You can't expect to get Krishna and not be all the way in. Husband and wife, same way. They have to be all the way in. Then it'll be a very good marriage. They have to dedicate everything to each other. Alright, let's go to the second of the Chatu Shlokis. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. So this verse is telling us what are the qualifications of a pure devotee. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service. Yes, if you're always thinking of Krishna, naturally that is going to turn into action. And they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. This is what we are meant to do with each other. When we get together, because we are, as I said previously, from one angle of vision, we are pure devotees in the sense that we all agree that Krishna is the Supreme. I don't think anybody here disagrees. So, from that angle of vision, you can be considered a pure devotee because you at least accept the principle that Krishna should be given full surrender, yes or no. You may not be able to do it yet, but you at least accept the principle that yes, we should surrender completely to Krishna. So that makes you in what we could say a elemental or neophyte pure devotee. Now you stay the course, you stay on the path. In time, it will mature and you'll be exactly what is being described in Bhagavad Gita at the end of chapter 12. There's a series of verses where Krishna says, the pure devotee is like this, like this, like this. That's coming. You've made the initial step by saying, yes, I accept that Krishna is the Supreme. Very good. So now, this is what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be enlightening one another and conversing about Krishna's name, fame, form, pastimes, or service. So, even you're discussing your service that you have, that falls into the category. We should take whatever service we have seriously. That's our life, and Bhakti Siddhanta said that on his deathbed. Bhakti Siddhanta told his disciples, your service, which is your all and all. So, Bharati, you have some service at New Dwarka, yes? Some regulated. So you have been taking that seriously, right? And because of that, you're advancing. And how do I know that? Your Bhagavatam test scores. Because things become evident when you see certain fruits or results. Okay, let's continue. The next of the Chatusloki. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Here is the completion of that other verse. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. This one takes it beyond. That Krishna is saying, if you are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I will give you the understanding how to come to me. And there's such a nice story. Prabhupada was in New York, 1976. They had done their first Rath Yatra in Fifth Avenue. So a reporter from a newspaper was interviewing Prabhupada. And Prabhupada's secretary then was Ramaswar Das. So the newspaper reporter was asking Prabhupada, how do you make your decisions when to open a temple, where to... So Prabhupada's servant answered on behalf of Prabhupada. Why? I don't know. So Ramaswar Das said to the reporter, oh, Prabhupada uses his intelligence. And Prabhupada said, no. Krishna tells me directly what to do. That devotee, shut up. Because Prabhupada laid it very clear. Krishna tells me directly what to do. One of the rare instances where Prabhupada sort of indicated, hey, I am on this pure devotee platform. So that day is coming also. Once you get to the stage of pure devotee, Prabhupada even said, the deity will talk to you. There's the famous story of the Sakshi Gopal deity in, was it Orissa? So, not yet, because he traveled. That the young Brahmin testified in front of the deity, I may need you to come and bear witness because the old Brahmin has promised me his daughter. And the old Brahmin was an aristocratic and this young Brahmin was from a poor family. So he knew. Anyway, he made the old Brahmin promise in front of the deity. So as it happened, when they went back to their village, the old Brahmin's wife and daughter, and especially the atheistic son, were saying, no, he didn't promise anything. And the atheistic Brahmin's son, he said, don't worry, I'll take care of it. So the young Brahmin came and said, okay, you promised to give your daughter. And the atheistic Brahmin's son, he took a stick and said, get out of here. And so he called all the villagers. The young Brahmin called all the villagers and said, he promised. And he said, don't you remember you promised in front of the deity? And so the old Brahmin was told by his atheist son, if this comes up, tell him you don't remember, just like we had a president like that, Reagan. I don't remember. So it was settled that if the deity would come and testify, then the marriage would happen. So the young Brahmin went back to Vrindavan, went before the deity and said, you remember, I had the Brahmin promise before you, I need you to come testify. And the deity spoke, saying, I'm just a statue. How can I come and testify? So the Brahmin said, if you can talk, you can walk. Let's go. So the deity said, okay, I'll come, but on two conditions. You have to walk in front and not look back. You'll know that I'm coming because of my nupur, ankle bells. You'll heal my ankle bells. And every day you have to cook me so much rice. Then I'll come. So they traveled a long distance, hundreds of miles. As they got close to the town, he didn't hear the ankle bells anymore. The Brahmin looked back and Krishna resumed his deity form. Then he went and everyone saw the deity had walked hundreds of miles. So the marriage went on. So that's the deity of Sakshi Gopal. But the idea was there was a conversation between him and the deity. And Prabhupada also said the day will come when you will talk to the deity. So keep worshiping your Radha and Krishna nicely. That day is coming. You also worship every day, right? You worship every day? Yes. You told me. You told me when I came to your house that, was it early in August? You told me your whole thing. I was very impressed. Okay. Last of the Chatushloki. To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. Again, Krishna, how he reciprocates with the pure devotees. To show them special mercy. In the previous chapter, we studied that verse. I'm partial to no one. I'm equal to all, but whoever renders service to me is going to get special mercy. Right? So here is another instance. Yes, Krishna is equal. Krishna doesn't play favorites. But if you approach him, then he may give you special attention, special mercy. Just like in a family, there may be many children. The mother is taking care of all the children. But if one child is constantly asking for, she naturally is going to pay more attention. So, what did Prabhupada's guru say? Don't try to see God. Act in such a way that God sees you. So that's, what does he mean by that? Do lots and lots of devotional service. Hearing, chanting, remembering, praying, worshiping. The nine different, do as much as you can. And Krishna, who's in your heart, will destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge. All right? We're up to 25 devotees. Everybody say Hari Bol. Chant the Maha Mantra one time. Okay, now we go to the next section. Arjuna accepts Krishna as God and requests to see his opulences. Arjuna said, "You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead." So after hearing all of this, especially this Chatushloki, now Arjuna says, "You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are the ultimate abode. You are the purest. You are the absolute truth. You are the eternal, transcendental, original person. The unborn, the greatest." All of these are glorifications, adjectives of Krishna's position as God. This is what it means to be God. To be God means you're the ultimate abode, you're the purest, you're the eternal, transcendental, original person, you're the greatest. All of these fulfills the complete definition of God. A couple of times in the past, when Archita and I are invited into high schools and colleges and they're studying comparative religions, Archita and I will sometimes chide the students. "So, what is religion?" And you'd be surprised, nobody raises their hand. They're in a comparative religions class and they can't even define the word religion. It's really funny. So we have to like sort of prompt them. And they'll say different things, and Archita will say, "None of you have said the G word," meaning God. Perhaps you want to include that in your definition, because they say, "Oh, it's simply a way of life," or "religion is a set of rules." So we get on their case. No, you got to have the G word. God's got to be in there. Okay. All the great sages such as Narad, Asita, Devala, and Vyas confirm this truth about you. And now you yourself are declaring it to me. The significance here is that Arjuna is aware that these great authorities have also accepted Krishna as the Supreme. So that is an important concept, that as we learned in chapter 3, whatever a great person does, common men follow. We see that in Lord Chaitanya's Leela. Who did Lord Chaitanya preach to? He preached to the big guns, Sarvabhauma and Prakashananda. That's who he made he wanted to conquer. They were the two biggest Mayavadi scholars in all of India at that time. So that's who Lord Chaitanya went after. You get the, what is that? You go after the head of the snake, right? You get the head, then you'll get everything else. So that's the idea. And also, in chapter 4, when Krishna was telling Arjuna, you'll notice, who did Krishna first speak Bhagavad Gita to? Sun God. In other words, you go for the big leader of society. If you get the big leader, you're going to get everybody else. And now you yourself are declaring it to me. Text 14. O Krishna, I totally accept as truth all that you have told me. Hopefully, you also can say that in your heart. If you can say, like Arjuna, O Krishna, I totally accept as truth everything you teach in Bhagavad Gita, you're doing good. If you can actually say that, neither the demigods nor the demons, O Lord, can understand your personality. There is a concept that Prabhupada deals with. Actually, it's the Bhagavatam. that to the degree someone thinks him or herself separate and independent, to that degree you don't understand God. And it's mentioned that even Lord Brahma, and they even say Lord Shiva, they still have a sense of being separate and equal. So there's a little bit that prevents them. Because Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, they're most powerful in this material world. Extremely powerful. So if they're going to get a little bit, you know, a tinge of pride, it's understandable. Okay? But still, that little bit is still going to prevent them from fully comprehending Krishna. In order to fully comprehend Krishna, you have to become a completely surrendered, humble, pure devotee. Complete with no sense of that I'm important, that I am. No, it has to be like Lord Chaitanya says, Trinadapi Sunichena Taradiva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. Always meek and humble. I'm nothing more, nothing less than the eternal, insignificant servant of Krishna. Also, the night of the Rasa dance, the gopis became proud, and therefore what happened? Krishna disappeared. Radharani also got proud. Krishna disappeared. Just to teach us. Just to teach us. Please tell me in detail of your divine opulences by which you pervade all these worlds. So in the next section, Vibhuti Yogas, there are 81. Krishna explains one after the other. I am this, I am time, I'm Himalayan mountains. He gives, and there's 81 of them where Krishna says, this is, I'm fishes, I am the shark of men, I am the monarch. Like that. He gives so many examples of how he has put his shakti potency into so many particular material things. Now, see, what does he say? The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, yes, I will tell you of my splendorous manifestations, but only of those which are prominent, for my opulence is limitless. So Krishna is just saying, here's a little taste. I'm limitless. So now, in the rest of the chapter, after delineating 81 Vibhuti Yogas, Krishna gives his own commentary. Listen to what Krishna says. O mighty conqueror of enemies, there is no end to my divine manifestations. What I have spoken to you is but a mere indication of my infinite opulences. Know that all opulent, beautiful, and glorious creations spring but from a spark of my splendor. So, just see, Krishna has told Arjuna all these things, and he's saying, this is just coming but from a spark of me. But now in verse 42, but what need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. That's Shirodakashai Vishnu. Shirodakashai Vishnu is the super soul. And Shirodakshai Vishnu is a expansion of Garbhadakshai Vishnu, who is an expansion of Mahavishnu, back, expansion after, till you get to Krishna. So Krishna is saying, this is just a little bit. So that ends chapter 10, and now we will get to chapter 11. Shri Krishna Bhagavan Ki. Let's do a quick bhajan, and then we'll continue. And so glad to see Manohar Shroff. Welcome to our little club. Jaya Radha Madhav Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhav Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Bharat Hari. Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Bharat Hari. Yasoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vana Chari. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Trinadapi Sunichena Tarori Vasahishnuna Amanina Madadena Kirtaniya Sadahari Hare Nama Hare Nama Hare Nama Eva Kivalam Kalo Nastiva 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 Gatiranyata. Chapter 11 has 55 verses entitled The Universal Form. In the first four verses, Arjuna wants to see the universal form. Text 3 pretty much sums it up. O greatest of all personalities, O supreme form, though I see you here before me in your actual position, as you have described yourself, I wish to see how you have entered into this cosmic manifestation. I want to see that form of yours. In chapter 10, Krishna listed vibhutis. So now Arjuna wants to see Krishna's gigantic universal manifest. He wants to actually see it. So in verses 5 to 8, Krishna agrees to display the universal form. Two verses are significant. O Arjuna, whatever you wish to see, behold at once in this body of mine. This universal form can show you whatever you now desire to see and whatever you may want to see in the future. Everything, moving and non-moving, is here completely in one place. But you cannot see me with your present eyes. Therefore, I give you divine eyes. Behold my mystic opulence. So, yes, Prabhu? Prabhupada mentions in the purport, he's asking that Krishna gave Arjuna the eyes to see. So could anybody else see? And how could Sanjay describe to Dhritarashtra if he wasn't given the eyes? So Prabhupada answers, that anyone who was on Arjuna's level of Krishna consciousness was able to see. And at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Sanjaya said, all this was possible because of the mercy of my guru, Vyasadeva. He directly says it. So obviously, Sanjaya was on the level of Arjuna enough that he's able to describe and see. Plus, he had the power of guru. Power of guru is very, very important. Even in the Bhagavatam, there are instances when the demons, because they're blessed by their guru, and the demigods are cursed by their guru, the demons are victorious, and the demigods have to go into hiding. So, we learn through the teachings of Prabhupada, Yasya prasada bhagavat prasada yasya prasada nagati katopi. The only way we can expect to get Krishna's mercy is through the blessings of our guru. And the very first prayer in the morning, Vande Gurusi Charanaravinda. Then again, 7 o'clock, when the deity's oars are open, Sri Guru Charana Padama. So in this line of Lord Chaitanya, right? Guru Krishna Prasadhe Bhai. And Prabhupada says, it's not by Guru alone, and it's not by Krishna alone. Combined mercy. Guru Krishna Prasadhe Bhai. Okay? Good enough? Can we proceed? All in favor say Hari Bol. So Arjuna was given the divine eyes by which to see. Similar to nowadays, they have this 3D TV. But you have to have this special, like when I went to see that movie Avatar. Right? When you enter the theater, they give you these glasses. And then, the things were coming right at your face. So I wish they would do a 3D movie of the universal form. If anybody on the internet from Hollywood is listening, whoever did Avatar, let's do this universal form in 3D. Oh, that would be amazing. That would be the greatest. You would get the Oscar of all time. But are they listening? Nah. All right. So verses 9 to 14, what Arjuna saw. Arjuna saw in that universal form unlimited mouths, unlimited eyes, unlimited wonderful visions. The form was decorated with many celestial ornaments and bore many divine upraised weapons. He wore celestial garlands and garments, and many divine scents were smeared over his body. All was wondrous, brilliant, unlimited, all expanded. If hundreds of thousands of suns were to rise at once into the sky, their radiance might resemble the effulgence of the Supreme Person in that universal form. So this is Sanjaya. Sanjaya is relating this to Dhritarashtra. Thousand, right? One sun. You try to look at one sun. Thousands. At that time, Arjuna could see in the universal form of the Lord the unlimited expansions of the universe situated in one place, although divided into many, many thousands. Then bewildered and astonished, his hair standing on end, Arjuna bowed his head to offer obeisances and with folded hands began to pray to the Supreme Lord. So I want everyone now to close their eyes and try to envision what you just read. And now, like Arjuna, let's pray to the universal form. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. So in verses 15 to 31, Arjuna prays and describes what he sees. And I picked verses 26 and 27 because it's like the most important thing. All the sons of Dhritarashtra, along with their allied kings, and Bhishma, Drona, Karna, and our chief soldiers also, are rushing into your fearful mouths. So he sees all these mouths of the universal form, and all the soldiers on both sides entering these mouths and being smashed in between. And it says here, and some I see trapped with heads smashed between your teeth, and including Bhishma, Drona, and Karna. O Lord of Lords, so fierce of form, please tell me who you are. I offer my obeisances unto you. Please be gracious to me. You are the primal Lord. I want to know about you, for I do not know what your mission is. So Arjuna has been seeing, describing, and praying. Now he has asked the million-dollar question. Who are you, and what is your mission? And now the universal form speaks his mind. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said,
Time. I am the great destroyer of the world, and I have come here to destroy all people,
with the exception of you, the Pandavas. All the soldiers here on both sides will be slain. So how did I do? Was that good? Was it good? All right. I love this. This verse, I love it. If they make that movie, I want to be the one that says that. So, time I am. So that's what time does. It just simply destroys. It happens imperceptibly, moment by moment. As we say in America, you're not getting any younger. Everybody in Hollywood knows that. That's why they get Botox and all this other stuff. Because every day, it's dwindling, 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 little by little. Okay. Therefore, get up. Prepare to fight and win glory. So this is not the first time that we've heard Krishna say, get up and fight. Now it's the universal form saying, get up and fight. And win glory. Conquer your enemies and enjoy a flourishing kingdom. They are already put to death by my arrangement. And you, O Savyasachi, Savyasachi means one who is expert at shooting arrows, and he certainly was, can be an instrument in the fight. Ah, so these two verses are very important, at least for me. You can be, all Krishna wants Arjuna to do is be his instrument. Here are my kartals. My kartals play the way I tell them to play. So, I should want to be an instrument in Krishna's hand. One of my favorite things that Prabhupada ever wrote is his poem when he arrived in America. And he has that line, I am a puppet in your hands. If you have brought me here to dance, make me dance, O Lord, make me dance as you like. That prayer of Prabhupada arriving, that I read and do a lecture on every year, because that teaches me what is the right mood and mental attitude to be a preacher. I want to be a preacher. So every year I have to study that and give a class, because that reconfirms how I should preach, why I should preach, and what is the proper mood to preach. Prabhupada lays it out perfectly. That's why he's the acharya. He teaches by his own example how one should prosecute Krishna consciousness. So we should all try to become an instrument in Krishna's hands, simply trying to do Krishna's service. Drona, Bhishma, Jayadratha, Karna, and other great warriors have already been destroyed by me. Therefore, kill them and do not be disturbed. Simply fight and you will vanquish your enemies in battle. The universal form is predicting, showing Arjuna what is going to happen. All he has to do is cooperate. All he has to do is just notice. He's not forcing. He's telling him everything, but still, he doesn't force. That's key. Krishna doesn't force anyone. You have to get in. You have to say, okay, I'll go for it. He doesn't interfere with your free will. All right, the next section. Arjuna directly prays to the universal form. I picked the most important ones. Arjuna said, O master of the senses, the world becomes joyful upon hearing your name. Do we become joyful upon hearing Krishna's name? And thus everyone becomes attached to you. Although the perfected beings offer you their respective homage, the demons are afraid and they flee here and there. All this is rightly done. I've had so many experiences that we'll be doing chanting on the street, like in Westwood, or I've done it in Fifth Avenue, 42nd Street. So the kirtan is going on, and some people, oh, they'll like imitate, they'll go, you know, and other people are like this, you know. Or when I was in Vancouver, every day we would go out in front of a big department store, we would have a bhajan party, and there was this Christian preacher. He would come every day, and I'm trying to do kirtan, and he'd come up right up to me. You must eat meat. It says so in the Bible. And it's so interesting. You know, only when the devotees are out preaching, then these guys come out. If we weren't out preaching, then they'd be... But as soon as we come... Oh, we... Like we do the Rath Yatra, right? Who's at the end of the Rath Yatra? The guy in the cow suit and the guy with the placards. You're going to hell. Those who worship idols are going to hell. But I love what Vajradharayan says. The guy in the cow suit and the other guys, where are they after the parade? They're right there getting the free prasadam. How funny. How funny. Welcome to the material world, folks. But there are people that when they hear the chanting, they can't stand it. But when I was in South Africa, it was amazing. We did Sankirtan. The temple is in one place, and then if you go down for about a mile, there's like a downtown shopping center. So we were chanting, and the local native African women, as soon as they hear the kirtan, they're clapping, they're dancing, and they chant. Amazing. It was simply amazing that they immediately take to kirtan. Okay, let's continue. Thinking of you as my friend, I have rashly addressed you, O Krishna, O Yadava, O my friend, not knowing your glories. Please forgive whatever I may have done in madness or in love. So I too would like to apologize to you. Please forgive me what I may have done in madness and in love all these years. Vanchakalpaturubhyascha kripa sindubhyaya bacha patitanang bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namona. I have dishonored you many times, jesting as we relaxed, lay on the same bed, or sat or ate to go. Could you imagine with that, jesting with Krishna, lying on the same, Now, I will tell you a story. I did take a nap with, was it two or three sannyasis? Okay, you all know Krishna Prem Mehta, right? Kamal Mehta. So maybe about 8 years ago, his father has an apartment at the temple. So one day, he invited me, Suvas, Radhanath Swami, Giriraj Swami, and we all had prasad. So, typical, they always make you eat more than you can. So, everybody ate more than they should have. So then, Vidura told the two sannyasis, take rest in the room here. So I joined. And there was three of us, me, Radhanath Swami, and Giriraj, all taking nap together on the floor in Vidura's room. Very nice. So I'm thinking, what it'd be like to take a nap with Krishna? Huh? I would love that experience, take a nap with Krishna. Right? Sometimes alone and sometimes in front of many friends. Oh, infallible one, please excuse me for all these offenses. You are the father of this complete cosmic manifestation of the moving and the non-moving. You are its worshipful chief, the supreme spiritual master. No one is equal to you, nor can anyone be one with you. How then could there be anyone greater than you within the three worlds, O Lord of immeasurable power? So these are nice prayers. So Prabhupada says you don't have to make up a prayer. Just have to say the same prayers as great devotees. That's very pleasing to Krishna. The idea of a prayer is to please Krishna. If he's pleased, then you'll get what you want, even without asking. Krishna already knows what you want. How is that? He's in your heart. He already knows what you want. So actually you don't need to ask. But if you pray nicely, following in the footsteps of great devotees, you'll please him. When he's pleased, you'll get everything you want. After seeing this universal form, which I've never seen before, I am gladdened. But at the same time, my mind is disturbed with fear. Therefore, please bestow your grace upon me and reveal again your form as the personality of Godhead, O Lord of Lords, O abode of the universe. O universal form, what's that? What kind of fear? Why? Well, if you were to see all around you thousands of heads and thousands of bellies and armies rushing in, I think you would not feel so peaceful, would you? I think it would be, and you got to understand, he's seeing this tremendous event here. I think, you know, what kind of fear? I don't know what kind of fear, but he's had enough. Yes, let's put it this way. He's seen enough. Yeah. Okay, let's say you go to a movie and it's very, very, you know, violent. And, you know, after a while, it's like, all right. One time I went to Saving Private Ryan. I went with my son-in-law because he was a Marine. He really wanted to see it. You know, and the whole movie is, it's like, after 15 minutes, it's like, that's all this movie is people killing. It's like, no, 15 minutes, all right. You know, you get tired. You want to see something, you know, but the whole movie was war. That's not my Ross. That's not. So, he's seen enough, okay? O universal form or thousand-armed Lord, I wish to see you in your forearm form, with helmeted head, with club, wheel, conch, and lotus flower in your hands. I long to see you in that form. So now, the next section, Krishna appeases Arjuna. Sanjaya says to Dhritarashtra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, having spoken thus to Arjuna, displayed his real forearm form, and at last showed his two-arm form, thus encouraging the fearful Arjuna. I think Prabhupada makes a point, fearful in the sense Arjuna was not accustomed to relating to Krishna in this. Arjuna is accustomed to relating to Krishna as a friend. So he was afraid of maybe he was going to lose that. He wanted things to, just like, say you get angry at your son. All right? You may have good reason, although he is perfect in all respects. But just, if you get mad at your son is waiting for the, all right, can you calm down now? You know, he would much rather have you not angry. Okay? So this universal form is not the kind of form that, well, okay, let's do Archie. It doesn't evoke the loving sentiment. When you see the beautiful form of Radha and Krishna, it makes you feel differently. Right? And the Bhagavatam says, the beautiful and blissful forms of Vishnu Narayan. Some temples of some demigods, they're very ghastly scenes. Okay? So, when we come to worship of Vishnu, Krishna, it's very nice, loving, peaceful, beautiful. Yes. But there's two kinds in the Sringas. Ugra and Shanta. Yes. Right. Good. Very good. Okay, let's continue. When Arjuna thus saw Krishna in his original form, he said, so the way it went is first he showed the forearm form and then back to his two-arm form. When Arjuna thus saw Krishna in his original form, that's the two-arm form, he said, O Janardhan, everyone say that name? Seeing this human-like form so very beautiful, I am now composed in mind and am restored to my original nature. So this very beautiful human form is called Saumya Vapu. That's the phrase used in this section. The beautiful form. The human-like form is the most, and we learn from Lord Chaitanya that the form of Krishna has four special qualities that not even the form of Narayan has. So Narayan's form is most beautiful, but Krishna's form is extra beautiful. And the Krishna form, Krishna plays that flute. And when he plays that flute, everyone becomes attracted. Just ask the gopis. They'll tell you all about it. Another feature of the Krishna Saumya Vapu is that that form is always surrounded by intimate loving devotees. Krishna's, oh, he's with the cowherd boys, he's with the residents of Vrindavan, he's with the gopis, or he's with the cows. He's always surrounded by loving devotees who have spontaneous love for him. All these devotees in Vrindavan, spontaneous. And then the last one, special extraordinary pastimes, culminating in Rasalila. So these are the four special qualities that Krishna has above Narayan. Okay. The rest of the chapter, the exclusivity of Krishna. In other words, Now we're going to hear how Krishna is exclusively special. So he's speaking. Two very important verses. These two verses are very, very important. My dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service. We read this yesterday in chapter 8. And I told you it was going to come up again at the end of chapter 11. Only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am standing before you. So the question always is asked, how can I understand God? Very simple. Undivided devotional service. 24/7, 365, life in, life out. Undivided. Okay? And thus can be seen directly. So, if I'm not seeing God, then that means my service is not undivided. There's something interfering. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding. So this, like Prabhupada used to say, it's not a cheap thing. God consciousness is not a cheap thing. Back in the 60s, hippies like me, although I didn't subscribe, but there was this hippie concept. God has now come in the form of LSD. That's what they used to preach. They used to preach that when you take LSD, you will have a God experience. As if it's that cheap. As if something material will give you something spiritual. That's called cheaters and the cheated. Doesn't work that way. Fortunately, even though I did all kinds of things, I wasn't that dumb. I was dumb, but not that dumb. And that's why when Prabhupada and the devotees came around, I was saved. But I knew people that were that dumb. I knew them. I don't know them anymore, but... Final verse. Now this final verse, number 55, Prabhupada says is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. This verse, number 55. My dear Arjuna, one who engages in my pure devotional service, free from the contaminations of fruitive activities and mental speculation, who works for me, who makes me the supreme goal of life, and who is friendly to every living being, certainly comes to me. So, pure devotional service. So that pure devotional service means, like it says, no fruitive activities, no mental speculation. You work for Krishna, and Krishna is the supreme goal of life. And, very similar to Jesus, love your neighbor as yourself, friendly to every living being. Why? Because Krishna is in your heart. Krishna is in everyone's heart. And when you're on this elevated platform, you don't even see the material bodies. But actually, you'll see Krishna in everyone's heart. That's what Lord Chaitanya discussed with Ramananda Roy. Actually, it was Ramananda Roy who said that the advanced devotee doesn't even... Just like, you may be wearing a nice set of clothes, but I overlook the clothes and I'm looking at you. I'm having a conversation with you. I'm not like staring at your shoes and talking to you. No. You may be wearing a very nice set of clothes, but when I'm talking to you, I look at you, not your clothes. So similarly, go further. When you're an advanced devotee, like my friend Urjaswat used to always say, Prabhu, I want you to step outside your body. I want to talk to you, Prabhu. Prabhu, step outside your body. I want to talk. He was from Texas. All right, now, we have a few minutes. Would you like to hear what I discovered in terms of Durga? Would you be interested in that? All right. And my producer especially is interested. So if she could tell me how many people we have online right now, that would be good. So this is not long. All right. So I entitled this Durga Tattva. So everyone chant the Maha Mantra one time. All right, so this is from Brahma Sanhita. Now the translation of the Brahma Sanhita and the purport is by the mercy of Prabhupada's guru, Bhakti Siddhanta. So the language is a little, it's scholarly British. All right, so here is how Bhakti Siddhanta explains the key verse about Durga Devi from Brahma Sanhita. Please repeat. Shristi Stati Pralaya Sadhana Shaktir Eka Chaye Vayasya Bhuvanani Vibharti Durga Ichchana Rupam Apiyasya Chacheshtate Sa Govindamadhi Purushang Tamahang Bhajami. One more time. One more. Tamahang Bhajami. So prior to this verse, Lord Brahma says that there are different dhammas. Devi Dham, which is the material cosmos. It's actually called Devi Dham. Above Devi Dham is Mahesh Dham, the abode of Lord Shiva. Now, subsequently I've read that even though this is Devi Dham, in Mahesh Dham, Lord Shiva associates with Durga in the form of Uma. Okay? Then above Mahesh Dham is Hari Dham, which is all the Vaikuntha planets that we talked about a couple of days ago. Ram's planet, Nisringa's planet. Then above that is Krishna's supreme abode, which is right here in this picture that Shekhar has on his wall. What I just said is right there. Okay, so after explaining the different dhams, then Lord Brahma explains quickly something. So he says, the external potency, Maya, who is of the nature of the shadow of the chit potency. Now the chit potency is Radharani, the spiritual potency. So the external potency is of the nature of the shadow of chit Radharani potency. Is worshipped by all people as Durga, the creating, preserving, and destroying agency of this mundane world. So she does all three. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda in accordance with whose will Durga conducts herself. And yesterday, I quoted that, we read that verse. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena konteya jagad viparivartate. Krishna said in that verse yesterday that the whole cosmic manifestation is under my will. I am in control. So now comes the purport, which I find very, very enlightening. So this again, this is Bhakti Siddhanta's purport. I'll try to, and I did explain a little bit here. Okay, let's go. The world in which Brahma takes his stand and hymns the Lord of Goloka. So who's the Lord of Goloka? Krishna. So Brahma is the engineer, okay? The world in which Brahma takes his stand, and him, the Lord of Goloka, is Devidam, consisting of 14 worlds. So that's there in the Bhagavatam. There's 14 in this universe. There's 14 planetary systems in three divisions, lower, middle, upper planets. We're in the middle. Okay. Yeah, this is all part of Devidam in the material world. So there's seven planets below the earth, seven planets, I don't know, there's above the earth, right? So the heavenly planets, demigods, planets of the rishis, and Brahma's planets is the top region. Okay. Consisting of the 14 worlds, and Durga is its presiding deity. According to Bhakti Siddhanta, Durga Devi is the presiding deity of this universe. She is 10-armed. And that's what I said yesterday. So it's confirmed. She's 10-armed now, representing the tenfold fruitive activities. Now, it doesn't explain what those tenfold fruitive activities are. She rides on the lion, representing her heroic prowess. She tramples down Mahishasura, representing that she is the subduer of vices. Vices means evil sin. She is the mother of two sons, Kartikeya and Ganesh, representing beauty and success. So I would think Kartikeya is beauty and Ganesh is success. Would you agree? That makes sense? She is placed between Lakshmi and Saraswati. Now this is interesting. I can't explain, but listen to what Bhakti Siddhanta says. She is placed between Lakshmi and Saraswati, representing mundane opulence and mundane knowledge. Now, I can't explain it. I'm sorry. I'm just sharing with you. Food for thought. No, mundane is mundane. Material. Okay. Mundane meaning material. Okay. She is armed with 20 weapons representing the various pious activities enjoined by the Vedas for suppression of vices. She holds the snake representing the beauty of destructive time. Now, how destructive time is beauty? That's beyond me. Such is Durga, possessing all these manifold forms. Should I go further? Is it good? All right. Durga is possessed of Durga, which means a prison house. When jivas, that's souls, right? That's living beings. When jivas, begotten of the marginal potency, tatashta sakti. In other words, because we're jiva, we can be influenced either by internal or external energy. That's our position. We can go either way. We're like Romney. We can flip-flop. Sometimes we're in the material energy. And you know my favorite story where the disciple says, Prabhupada, I fell into Maya. Prabhupada says, no, you're always in Maya. Sometimes you fall into Krishna. So that's what's happening to all of us. We're sometimes Krishna conscious, sometimes not. When the jivas forget the service of Krishna, they are confined in the mundane prison house, the citadel of Durga. I was mentioning this last night. As soon as you don't serve Krishna, Durga immediately takes you. All right, come here. The wheel of karma is the instrument of punishment in this place. The work of purifying these penalized jivas is the duty devolved. Now, devolved means to be delegated to. So the work of purifying these penalized jivas is the duties devolved upon Durga, which coincides to what Krishna said. This material nature is working under my direction. So, and the verse in the Brahma Sanhita, she's working under Govinda's sanction. So it's completely logical. She has been, this is what, that's her service. She has been given a service by Govinda. She is incessantly engaged in discharging the same by the will of Govinda. When, luckily, forgetfulness of Govinda on the part of imprisoned jivas is remarked by them by coming in contact with self-realized souls and their natural aptitude for the loving service of Krishna is aroused. Okay, so that was a lot. In other words, when we are in the material world and we notice that we have forgotten Krishna, and how is that possible? You come in contact with devotees who wake you up and say, hey, you have forgotten Krishna. And it's like, oh, that's my problem. Okay, when that happens, and then as a result, okay, I need to do devotional service. Listen to this. This is great. So when their natural aptitude, because love of Krishna, service to Krishna is naturally there in the heart, right? So when that is aroused, Durga herself then becomes the agency of their deliverance by the will of Govinda. It says right here, then Durga herself then becomes the agency of their deliverance by the will of Govinda. The way I would explain that, if you recall when we studied 714, the Daryate, the material energy is either exploited or utilized. When you forget Krishna, now you're trying to exploit Durga. But when you become a devotee, now you can utilize. I'm utilizing the Durga, but for the satisfaction, my aptitude for loving service. So, that's why I was saying on Sunday that when the congregation is fully enlivened to serve Krishna more and more, and I made the point, when Krishna sees that we're utilizing everything He's already given us, then your next temple will immediately manifest. Because He's seeing that you've already used every square inch of what He's already given you. Okay. Durga herself then becomes the agency of their deliverance. Yes. Agency. In other words, you need something. We're not impersonalist. We do use our senses, mind, and all our material assets to serve Krishna. That's the agency by which we serve Krishna with so-called material things. Otherwise, how are you going to demonstrate service? Husband and wife get together. You love me. Okay, don't tell me. Show me. Do something. So the wife bakes a cake or makes cheesecake. And the husband will, you know, bring flowers or a ring. He does something to demonstrate. So that's what bhakti yoga is. What did we hear yesterday? Yad karoshi yad ashnasi. Whatever you do, whatever you offer, whatever you eat, do it as an offering for me. In other words, demonstrate. That's what bhakti yoga is. Demonstrate. Okay. So Bhakti Siddhanta says, so it behooves everybody. Oh, this is another great line. This should be in Radharaman Temple. Listen to this. So it behooves everybody to obtain the guileless grace of Durga the mistress of this prison house by propitiating her with the selfless service of Krishna. Bhakti Siddhanta is really good there. Really good. Could you, right? I'll repeat it because it's brilliant. It behooves everybody to obtain the guileless grace of Durga, the mistress of this prison house. How? Propitiating her. Propitiating means getting her favor, getting her blessings. How? With selfless service to Krishna. Perfect. No more fighting, no more. Everybody can live together with this beautiful understanding. Now, there's one more paragraph. Do we have time? I'm asking the boss. No more time? All right, last paragraph. I was hoping you guys liked this. I wasn't sure. That's why I asked permission first. So I have permission to go on? Okay, this is Bhakti Siddhanta, not me. The boons received from Durga in the shape of wealth, property, recovery from illness, wife and sons, should be realized as the deluding kindness of Durga. In other words, apart from serving Krishna. In other words, you all know better than me. People are worshiping Durga for so many material things for themselves. So that's what he's referring to. Not utilizing, he's not talking about how we use everything for Krishna. He's talking about people who just want things. That is the deluding kindness of Durga. The mundane psychical, meaning psyche, jubilations of Dasha Mahavidya, the 10 goddesses of forms of Durga, which you were talking about yesterday, Ramakrishna Das, are elaborated for the delusion of the fettered souls in this world. Fettered means prisoner, shackled. Jiva is the spiritual atomic part of Krishna. When he or she forgets service of Krishna, he or she is at once deflected by the attracting power of Maya in this world, which I said a little while ago, who throws one into the whirlpool of mundane fruitive activity, karma, by confining one in a gross body consisted of 5 material elements, their 5 attributes, 11 senses, resembling the garb of a prisoner. So, that's why Prabhupada used to say, you have a material body, that's your, what do they call it, jumpsuit, that's your prison suit. The mere fact, because if you weren't a prisoner, you'd be in the spiritual world. Soon as you're in the material world, you're a prisoner. We're all prisoners here. Okay, finishing up. In this whirlpool, Jiva has experience of happiness and miseries, heaven and hell. Besides this, there is a subtle body consisting of mind, intelligence, and ego inside the gross body. By means of the subtle body, the Jiva forsakes one gross body and takes recourse to another. Yes, when you die, the soul is transferred to the next body along with mind, intelligence, and ego. The Jiva cannot get rid of the subtle body full of nescience and evil desires unless and until liberated. On getting rid of the subtle body, the soul bathes in the viraja. The viraja is the in-between material and spiritual worlds. The viraja is the abode where Mahavishnu resides. So that water is basically spiritual. So as when you're leaving this material world, You bathe in that viraja and then you go to Hari Dham. Or if you're powerful enough, Krishna Dham. Such are the duties performed by Durga in accordance with the will of Govinda. Thank you very much for that ecstasy.